Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Welcome, welcome, everybody. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am your host, Caroline Rutterman. And we have a great show today, and we are going to interview Darlene Vandegrift, who is a transformational counselor. She is an author, a multidimensional mediator, and an artist. And welcome, Darlene.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Let's just dive right in. How do you help people?
So people usually come to me. I started out as a medical intuitive, and so people would come to me if the medical profession wasn't necessarily filling their needs. And in doing so, what I would find with people is it's not only finding out what their organs percentages are, if there's stress in that organ, but it's also the fact that other things get involved. So we're not just, you know, we're not separate components in our body. So we have our energy body, we have our mind, we have our, you know, our physical form that combined together, if there's an illness, the likelihood is there is always going to be an emotional component and most likely maybe a spiritual component to that illness. So it's finding that information. I tap into or access the person's innate wisdom, and I work with their guidance system, and all that information comes together. So it weaves a story for the person of what exactly, how did this start, what's the blockages, and what are the steps forward.
That's really interesting. Can you tell us maybe an example or a story of how that has that idea of identifying and the spiritual and the emotional component of the healing? Do you have any stories about how that's really made a huge difference in somebody's life?
So I'm thinking back on an old client that came in, and she was dealing with health issues in relation to her ovaries and uterus. And what came up with that while she was on the table, I was working on the table at that point. This was like 20 some years ago. And we discovered that where one of the blockages were is that she was actually a twin in utero. And there was a big emotional release for her. And she actually started bleeding on the table,
wow.
She was not supposed to have her menses at that point or whatever. And so it was very cathartic for her. It was very emotionally based for her, but it made a lot of sense of why she was always looking for another piece of herself in this lifetime.
Yeah.
So some of that, so that would have been like this physical, emotional impact. There's other people that what happens is we can trace it all the way back prior to conception. That was there a past life or two that has to do with what they're dealing with present day, whether that's a physical issue or a relationship issue or sometimes even a career issue of where did this really stem from? And is there any baggage or energy that you're carrying that you don't need to carry? You know, so we sort through that. They're always given homework in some way so that they can go through their own processes.
How do we know if it's our own personal stuff, if it's some past life thing that we're hanging on to? How do we delve into that space of, I mean, do we typically call on another person, an intuitive, a medical intuitive like yourself? Can we access that ourselves?
I believe if you have a tool, you can. So I was introduced to kinesiology when I was 16.
Okay.
And so that became my primary tool that led me to many other modalities. But it still is a primary tool for me. But that took me into my own place of my own healing and what I needed to find out about myself in relation to behaviors and patterns and thoughts, you know, and stuff that was, you know, issues that were on my genetic line and that type thing. So that was my primary tool. I believe that people can do some of that on their own, but you can get stuck in that too, because then you're only, you only have as much information as you have. You know, someone else that can work with you will either have different information or more information that can add to the soup so that you have a more capability of moving forward.
I love that. That's really cool. So Liz, I know that you have a book coming out. You co-authored a book that's coming out in 2019 called Awakening the New Human, Discovering the Truth of Who We Are. And there was a really great quote that you had on your website. If anyone out there is just tuning in, you're listening to WXOJ 103.3 FM, and you are listening to Energy Matters, and we're here chatting with Darlene Vandegrift today. And who is a medical intuitive and a transformational counselor. And on your website of soulunion.com, you had talked about this quote is saying that as long as we live in the denial of non-dominant knowledge, past lives, or multidimensional experiences or evidence of the existence of other worlds, we're doomed to create a cumulative karmic reality that manifests as the unconscious state of calamity and chaos that we continue to live in the debris of other timelines. And it is this condition of existence that makes drama. I just have to say that, like, you know, my friend who's a sex therapist would call that the lizard brain taking over, or these unconscious instincts when we just react in some way.
Yes.
And that chaos and that drama. And, you know, it's really, really interesting to kind of think about these timelines and this, like you say in this quote, this denial of the non-dominant knowledge, this kind of thing that, like, we're not consciously aware of. Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful.
Well, we are not aware of who we really are for the most part. So we've as a society, as a culture, have been somewhat dumbed down in relation to, so people that have intuition, or they're highly highly intuitive, or they're highly their intellect feels higher. People go, oh, wow, that they're really smart, or they're really that. But they don't realize that that is within themselves, too. We've been just trained and taught that we don't have those capabilities. You know, and it's part of this awakening that I believe is really happening globally, this awakening of people just accepting that more, accepting who they are, maybe exploring it, looking into it, so that they can bring these qualities and their aspects of themselves up to the surface so they can utilize them.
So if a lot of this kind of society's aspect of dumbing things down for us, then who are we really?
That's what the book is about. Like, who, what have we bought into, you know, in relation to questioning our science and questioning the religion and questioning all the things that we've been taught, our history, you know, how much of that is real? And there's much more out there if you start to investigate of what science and historians are coming up with that we are being taught in our regular books that are not, it's not true anymore. They found other things out, but we're still being taught the same thing. So it's having a person, whether that's on the internet or, you know, finding something in a book that really resonates with them so that they can start to explore a little bit further and ask questions. So one thing that humans need is to be very curious in relation to who am I and what do I want and where am I going and what is this world about?
Yeah. And so early on, you used kinesiology or muscle testing.
Yes.
That's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And so you're using muscle testing to find your truth and your sort of path through a lot of that?
In the beginning, yeah, that's primarily what I would use. It was, there was a lot of aha moments. You know, people say, well, you can't self-test. And I believe that that's true if you're going to hold on to a certain, like, I need to find this out, but it needs to be this answer. Then you're going to find that answer. Do you know what I mean? You're going to find what you're looking for, as opposed to being in a neutral state and then asking the question. And there's different ways to use the kinesiology so that you're not really looking at the question, or you're not assuming that that's what that is. Or, you know, you put it on paper, you turn it over. There was a lot of that happening in my earlier years. But then later, as I, at the kinesiology as the tool started to open me up to more information. So what would happen as I was working with clients is that I would be shown a picture that didn't seem like it was relevant to the person. And I would see this in my mind's eye, or I would hear something that, you know, I'd be prodded to say this, and I'd be like, no, I'm not saying that. It has nothing to do with it. No, I'm not saying that. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, I will. And then it would take us in a whole other direction. So it was paying attention and listening to those other aspects of either myself or guidance from either the person or from myself in saying, there's more to this story than you know. Let's move in that direction.
Start following those clues.
Yeah. And the more my experience with that is the more that I trusted that, the more it opened.
Mm.
You know?
I very much found those experience as a Reiki practitioner, those moments of like, no, I don't want to say whatever information is coming through right now. Like, that is not comfortable for me.
Yeah. And what would happen if, you know, I said that and this person was like, I don't know what that's about. You know, so you don't trust yourself. But kinesiology, I felt, really led me to trusting the information and myself, which I think is really important for people, so that you tune into your intuition, you tune into your innate wisdom, and then you follow that, and it'll take you in places that you never dreamed.
Yeah, and that confidence factor is huge when you're I feel like when you're doing any kind of intuitive work, to really just make sure that, you know, that that internal space, mm-hmm. that you're in tune with that internal space, and that you have the confidence to project that. Not project it, but to express it.
Express it. Yeah. And then the world, you know, that law of attraction, then synchronicity starts to come in. So then you say, wow, I just thought of that the other day, or that really came in, and look at, there's a billboard that says this, or somebody calls and they mention it three times in a row, and you're like, then you know you're on the right path.
Mm. How does synchronicity flow into your life? How do you use your synchronicities within your like exploratory world?
So for me, I'll be connected to the beings that I work with. Okay, so I call them the Council of 28. So I'll be connected with them. I'll be getting a download of information or whatever, and then that session is done. And then I see something on TV that's very similar, or I'll be out, you know, something comes up on the radio, or somebody will call and say, hey, you know, have you heard about, and it was something that was in that that download. So to me, it's like, okay, so now we're in sync. You know, whatever this was, I now have confirmation on some level that it's in the outside world. You know, it's moving in that. It's not just a download for me. It's out there. So let's explore that more.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's a very fun game to play if anyone out there is listening and, you know, starts to see the number patterns or the sequence of, you know, information like you described, mm-hmm. as that. It's very fun to start following those clues. Even if you just take one day and I'm just going to explore and see whatever happens, wherever the day takes me.
Yeah, don't plan your day and just see where it takes you, right?
I love it. And Darlene, so first I want to make sure that everybody knows how to find you. Your website is soulunion.com, and you also have another website called www.spirituallyevolvedlightforce.com. So there's soulunion.com and then also spirituallyevolvedlightforce.com, excuse me. So, you know, you kind of had briefly mentioned a little bit about the Council of 28.
Yes.
And some of your artwork was really beautiful portraits of these intergalactic councils of you know, different beings throughout the universe. Can you tell us a little bit about how these portraits kind of evolved and how your art fed into some of this work that you do, this intuitive work that you do?
So I've been working with the Council of 12 for about 30 years, but this last Council of 28, which includes the Council of 12, it has come forward in the last 5.5 years. When my mother passed was a huge transition of these beings coming more forward to work in a very different way. And about 2 years ago, I had met all of them. That's why I claimed the mediator piece, because they brought me in as a somewhat of a witness or an observer in relation to doing mediation between these beings, that they were showing me their timelines that would be more important to humanity rather than being their light being that they are. They showed me other timelines. Mm-hmm. And so we developed a relationship with that, with these multidimensional selves. And they asked me to do a picture. And I was like, okay, so I have a 3x3, which I think is on 3 feet by 3 feet, which I think is on the website. And so they told me who to paint and who to paint first, but with no eyes. And the reason why, which I was really grateful for, is that when I finished the whole thing and then they said, put the eyes back in, it was very eerie to have them looking at me while I'm painting them.
Whoa.
So it was like, I was grateful that it was done. And at the end of that, the whole painting was finished once the eyes went in. About the year following that, they were like, no, we want each one a separate 12x12 painting. So I have those. So I have 28 paintings of 12 by 12 of these beings that are much different looking. It's like they evolved in relation to when I first painted them as opposed to how they wanted to be represented now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So when you talk about meeting them, what does that look like for you? What is that meeting point or a place?
The council room of where I originally was meeting them. And that place is, I can describe it. It has a dome, glass dome over top, and it has bleachers, which we would consider bleachers, but it's a teaching facility. And so in the center is a well-lit oval, huge oval table, and they would sit there, or other speakers would sit there, and you would sit in the audience, or you would listen to what was going on. That's more on a galactic level.
Very cool.
So that's where I would be more prone to meet them. How that would happen is in a meditation, they would show up and I would be there already. Or I'd be gardening or whatever, and it'd be like, oh no, this is a time that we need to talk. And, you know, so I was like, okay. So that, I mean, developed a relationship of being available when asked.
Fabulous. So tell us a little bit, have you always been super intuitive like this, or was there a process of kind of developing your inner world, or tell us a little bit about how your intuition was really, because I feel like I'm also a very intuitive person, mm-hmm. But kind of going into a council where I can see the room that's not quite where my skills are at the moment. Do you feel like, I guess, yeah, I mean, I'm really curious as to know how this evolved for you.
So I'll try to do it a condensed version.
Yeah.
So I remember my in utero experience because my mother was supposed to die and so was I. So it when she was very toxic and I lost connection with her, there was a lot of feeling like I was putting my pieces together, okay, without a book. So that was my experience in relation to my earliest memory in this lifetime. And then my mother was always ill in some way growing up, and I was always fascinated by the human body in relation to how was it working, what was she doing in the hospital all these times, because I was never allowed in the hospital. So when I was like 16 or 17, she was diagnosed. They didn't know what it was. It was rare, whatever. She was given 6 months to live, and I was introduced at that time to a chiropractor that brought in, it took them 3 years to turn her into remission, but she lived till 86. So, you know, it was a long life after that. And it got her into the health field of where she was actually doing a lot of hands-on work and healing. From that point, I always wanted to learn more about the physical body and how it worked, what made us tick. And so I became a massage therapist and opened up a massage school. My mother and I had a clinic for 10 years in Pennsylvania, moved into New York State in 95. And through that whole time, I didn't acknowledge the intuitive piece. It felt like it was just something that was, and it wasn't something that was different or whatever. And I pretty much kept it under wraps.
That is what every super intuitive person always says. I just thought I thought this was normal.
Yeah, you know, it was that's it. And so fast forwarding, having children or whatever, it brought me into this new consciousness and new awareness. And as I had the kinesiology and I started working with people and I was primarily working on the body, I became more fascinated and interested in the behavior of you know, what is the emotional level with that? And took classes like One Brain and the kinesiology in relation to that and the emotional level. And it just built on each other. And as it was building, I was learning more and more and more about me. So it kind of, my career and my own evolution kind of interfaced with each other, you know, until the council started to show up. And that was a 91. That was a being that showed up, and I was pretty floored by that. And I channeled for a few years, but decided channeling was not something I liked to do. I didn't like the energy in my body. So then they moved me into being more of a mediator.
Which being showed up first?
Ellie Wazar.
Okay.
Ellie Wazar was from Meldac. Yes. And he actually showed up. It was a fascinating story. My mother was doing a therapy where she was doing a regression, and they had taped it so that I could listen to it because I was not in that class. And when I listened to it, there was a voice that came up because it was about her having an abduction where she was screaming. She was in terror. Wow. And there was a voice that came up that said, it was not me. It wasn't us. And I'm like, I have no idea who that was. So I went into regression with the same therapist, and what came up is Ellie, and that wasn't us. That is not who we are. That is not what we do. And interesting enough, at that time, I was involved with a small group of people that his timeline had something to do with them. And so it was him coming to Earth. It was the transformation that he went through, and it was like a 3 or 4 year process, and then he left.
Hmm.
But it moved into more of a council of other beings. And I kept that under wraps for a very long time.
Why did you keep that under wraps for a long time?
It felt like it was personal. It felt like it was, if I got spoken to while I was working with a client, it was not comfortable to say, oh, I'm getting this, and, you know, somebody's telling me this or that. It was very, back in that time, the community that I was working with would have been very judgmental. And so it just felt like, wasn't until the last, I would say, 6-7 years of coming out and saying, you got to talk about this, you know?
Yeah. And I think that people often dismiss their dreams or these intuitions because it feels uncomfortable to talk mm-hmm. about. It feels like judgment might come up, or there's this kind of stuff that just maybe you're not ready to put it out there. But I think everyone really, their lives are so much more improved when we do have the courage and the confidence to start talking about some of these different entities that we can connect with in different cosmic realms.
I'm on the board of exoconsciousness.com, and they're primary, and they're not up and running yet. But their primary interest is connecting with experiencers, because they are the ones that are shunned more often than not. They don't see that they have value. And we see it as they have a lot of value. They're the ones that are either getting information, or they need help in understanding what had happened to them, or any of that, you know, and they hold a wealth of knowledge.
Do you think that, and this is sort of coming from the back of my mind a little bit, but I find that there is a connection. So I have a lot of intuitive, very, very intuitive people in my life, and I find that there's a connection between people who are channeling a lot of information and mental health,
mm-hmm.
and not saying that everyone is crazy that's, you know, receiving information, but some people that are diagnosed as schizophrenic mm-hmm. or bipolar are often kind of slipping into these dimensional realms mm-hmm. in a faster and clear, in a very like clear way. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that, or any, I guess I'm just sort of putting that on a platter if you have anything that you want to express about that.
Well, I think that there's a thin line in relation to some people that are considered mentally ill, and those that have visions, or they have a voice in their head or whatever. You have to be very discerning when you're listening to channeling or anybody that has information that feels unusual to you. You have to be very discerning in relation. Does it resonate with me? Does it feel like the piece of truth that I've been looking for? You know, it's that type of thing. And sometimes I find that there's usually an element of truth in everything. There's an element of it. It doesn't mean it's 100%, but you'll find something in pieces of information. But as far as I've been working with him since he's 5 and he's 30 now, and he's doing his PhD, and he's very connected on the spiritual level with beings and entities. And he's actually creating that in the mental health field so that people can look at this as a possibility that they're not so off. There's other ways to bring this into the mental health field to take a look at what is real, what's really happening to them. So I'm fascinated to see what he comes up with.
Very cool. I mm-hmm. like that people are delving into that direction mm-hmm. because I think it's very, very important. There's a lot of pieces to our health, like we've been talking about, whether it's the spiritual component, the emotional,
right?
You know, there's a lot. We're very complex beings.
We are. We have a lot of aspects.
We have a lot to us. You were starting to tell us a little bit about the importance of meditation in the connection from our outer physical selves, our outer world, and centering with our inner world. How does meditation come into play within our healing space?
So meditation is very important, if not vital, in getting the brain to calm down, because that is usually what is wired, the monkey mind. And so coming down into whatever form of meditation works for the person. It doesn't have to be, some people cannot sit and blank their mind out. They have to be in a moving or a walking meditation. Being out in nature is also part of that. So meditation brings you to a place of inner awareness where that you really can feel your body in a very different way. And in doing so, you're more in that space so that you can co-create. So whether that's with a multidimensional self or some information that comes in or whatever, you're an empty vessel at that point so that something else can happen. When I first started to meditate, and my meditations never were the kind of just blanking your mind and sitting there. I think that would have drove me crazy. But
there's a lot of people have a hard time just sitting down for more than 30 seconds at a time.
Right? Yeah. You know? But I was reading a book back in the late 80s about accessing the alpha field, right? And it was fascinating for me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I had 3 young kids at the time. And every time they took a nap, I would go and try this and I'd fall asleep. So I did this for months. And then one day I was like, no, I'm not tired. I think I can do this. And I sat down, and within, like, I would say 10 to 15 minutes, there was this whole movement forward. Like I was shot through the universe. I was seeing stars and I was seeing planets, and there was faces that I didn't even recognize. And I ended up in another place that I just stayed with it. That's when the information started to come in. There was metaphors in relation to what I was seeing and what I was experiencing. And I think that opened doors for me. So whether that can be other people's experiences, I'm not sure. But that's how, when I close my eyes now, and a lot of times the meditation process shows up when I'm driving, because that's the connected, my half of my mind's busy in relation to doing what its thing is, an automatic driving.
Absolutely.
And then the other is coming in with information, or, you know, I'm being communicated with in some way. So,
and when you say that you're doing, when you're sitting down and you're kind of, you know, feeling propelled forward, are you having out of body experiences, or do you still feel connected to your physical space? Is it all sort of in the intuitive imagination, third eye realm? What does that look like for you when you're, or at least during that first meditation that you really felt?
So that first meditation, no, I didn't feel like I was out of body. I felt very present. What I noticed was in the pictures that were being shown to me, I had to talk them. First, it kept me present in saying, and there's this, and there's this, and because then the pictures would move. Otherwise, they would stay stationary. So, and it kept me from falling asleep. So it kept me in kind of that limbo state of still being here, still being grounded, but able to articulate what's going on in another dimension.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And when I work with people, I'm in several dimensions. So, you know, I'm here, I'm monitoring them. If they're sitting in front of me, I have my hands on them, so I'm accessing their innate wisdom. But then I'm either listening to what guidance is saying, or I'm tracking them to find out where they're stuck or where their belief systems are coming from. So it's being in like three, four, maybe even five different places at the same time to weave the story.
Does fear, do you ever get scared in that space? Does fear ever creep in when you're doing any kind of intuitive work?
No. I've only experienced probably twice in 30 years where working with somebody and it felt like not good energy. Mm-hmm. And I had to clean off after that in relation to wherever they were connected with. But most of the time, no, I would say no. I'm very curious. So I like to, you know, let's see what's under this rock and let's see what's under this rock as opposed to,
yeah,
oh, I'm afraid of what's under that rock.
Yeah, it definitely is a different approach when it's exciting and kind of curiosity. And it's a much higher state to resonate in when you come at it from, you know, that mm-hmm. place instead.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more. One question I did want to ask you. Do you have particular methods of cleaning off or clearing off that you like to do? Like how would you, you know, with that kind of yucky energy that you talked about?
One of the things that works really well for me, which is the goodbye process. So at the end of the day, if I feel like I've been doing this for 8 hours a day and my mind is very full, right? There's nothing, it just feels full. It's energetically like full. I'll go back and I say goodbye to so-and-so. I say goodbye to, and I'll just go through a litany of things that might have been going on that day. You know, I say goodbye to this session and that person, and that's what came up with this. And I can feel it going like that. It feels like it's just clearing. And by the end of 5 minutes of doing that, I feel much more centered.
Hmm.
You know?
So you just say goodbye, so-and-so.
Yeah,
thank you,
I have a little
goodbye.
Visual that probably goes with that, you know, so I see them, I see me saying goodbye to them, you know, and they're gone within seconds, that type thing.
Does that work with preventing burnout after a really long day?
Yes. Yeah, because I feel energized after it.
Oh, because you're essentially recalling all your energy instead of letting it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, because, you know, like being in those different places with so many different people, and maybe not having the time in between to clean off, right? It's what happens is you just become energetically full. So the saying goodbye just goes and just removes it. It's just like, you know, washing the dishes. It just it just removes all the stuff that you
just
picked up all
let it go
during
down
the day
the drain.
And it's not mine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I like that a lot. I'm going to give that a try.
Okay.
That's a fun one. So meditation for you right away kind of brought you into this like very, very visual space. Has there been an evolution, or did you feel like it just turned on, like as soon as you were able to learn how to train and clear your thoughts, that it just opened up that world for you? Or do you feel like it continually evolved into how has your meditation practice kind of evolved?
It opened up, like I said, in relation to being, and then what would happen is sometimes I would be quiet and try to do a meditation early on, and it didn't seem like it was getting anywhere. And I attribute that to I was not centered. I was not ready for it. You know, I was forcing something that wasn't there. But now in the last, 20 years, you know, it's been, if I sit down at all and just take a couple breaths in, I'm there. It doesn't take long, you know. And I don't know if that's how everybody imagines their meditations to be, but that's how it works for me. it's always information is what I can tell you. And I can reach out to there and say, I would like something about this, or I get it like a tap on the shoulder and say, hey, you know, we need to talk to you about something.
And you have a particular meditation, the 2-4-6 meditation that you really like. Can you describe that for us a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, so 2-4-6 was given to me by the Council of 28. It's to, primarily, we started that in a group of four. And with that 2-4-6 is the second, fourth, and sixth chakra. So what happens with that is we ground and then we move counterclockwise to dump whatever residue that we don't want in the second, fourth, and sixth chakra.
And so the second, fourth, and the sixth chakra, or the second chakra is your solar plexus, which is just below the belly button.
Yeah, so it's your creative center.
your fourth chakra is at your heart center, so your heart space. Mm-hmm. And then your sixth chakra is your
pineal and third eye.
Perfect. Yes. Okay.
So we dump whatever is something that whether that's concept or whether that's belief systems or anything that you feel like you just want to get rid of. Then we take our DNA up and we keep going further up into the cosmos, okay, which is where the council room, when I work with groups with this, we go to the council room and we move into our light body, and that's where the healing happens. So in that council room, as a group, we are all pretty equal, you know, and so there's more questions asked. And as that vibration comes up with the people being curious and asking questions,
curiosity energy, everybody.
Yes, it's valuable. As that energy comes up, we are then one consciousness. And then those beings or whoever is present in the council room can take that and it ripples out through wherever they're going to take it. So that's the meditation that I work with groups. Because it takes us to a different level. We're not just working on this 3D level. We're on another level, another plane, another dimension.
How have you experienced that ripple effect that you're talking about in our dimension? How have you noticed or witnessed that meditation working for people here?
So when I'm working with individuals or if somebody wanted to work with the 246, which I'm hoping to record and get it back on the website because it's on there, but it's not on there. The link isn't there. How it works with people is if you're going to acknowledge that this is a relationship that is in trouble, or this is something that I want, you put it in the center of the 246. And when you take it up, it's not with an idea that it needs to change this way. Okay. It's more of an open-ended, this is what I'm offering. This is what the issue is. Okay. You don't need to resolve it, because going up in that 246, you're actually accessing the field of infinite possibility. So we're very locked into, oh, it has to be this way. It may be something in totally different. So what I've noticed with people that do that, and in a day, a two, you know, two, a week, something like that, something will shift with what they've put into that. And so a lot of times it's like the Ho'oponopono. Familiar with that? The I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, and thank you.
Yeah.
It's an amazing tool.
It is a really beautiful tool.
It is.
Such a big heart center space.
And the things that happen, the ripple effect in using that. I've had so many people that have come back and said, you know, I did this with my sister. I haven't talked to her in 3 or 4 years. She sent me a letter last week, you know? So there's things that are constantly keeping that energy moving is really vital.
So it's more that it kind of unsticks things.
It unsticks things. It takes you out of feeling like you have to control it. It puts it into sending it up to the universe, you know? Give me something back that I don't know, which is fine.
How do we, on a day-to-day basis, hold space for infinite possibility?
You don't become attached to anything, which is very hard.
That's very hard.
Not to do.
Okay.
Neutrality is a big one.
Okay.
You know,
meditation.
Staying neutral, meditation, being in that space of emptiness and allowing. You know, I work with these seven seeds. It's acceptance and allowance and commitment, trust, truth, co-creativity and integrity. And it's all part of being human and how to work with staying neutral. You know, how do we hold our own integrity of who we are, you know, and with our better belief systems, you know, and looking at the outlook at life is with a much more whole viewpoint.
Are these seven seeds also in your book that you just came
yes.
out with? And if anyone's just tuning in, you're listening to Energy Matters, and we are interviewing Darlene Vandegrift, and you are the co-author of a book that's coming out in 2019 called Awakening the New Human, Discovering the Truth of Who We Are. So can you tell us a little bit more about what kind of gems we're going to, well, tell us a little bit about the book, because you were telling me how on one of the breaks about the kind of creation of the book, that it was a series of lectures.
Yeah. So the co-author is teaching astro sociology at a college in New York.
Astrosociology. I don't know what that is, but it sounds great.
It is. It's very expansive in relation to what it opens these kids' minds to. And so the book was structured in relation to being a teaching book. So it has a workbook that's attached to it. Part of it is getting us to question, being curious about what is our real history? What does science believe now that we're not being taught in schools? You know, where does religion come in with this? You know, is there ancient civilizations that we're not being told about? It feeds all that curiosity so that it brings you into the place of, in the other chapters, is what is going on? How do you raise your vibration? What do you need to look at? You know, is it health issues? You know, do you need to look at that? How do you bring it up in relation to meditation? Is there tools out there for you? And then it goes into more of the story that we're talking about today with other beings and multidimensional selves that really want connection with us. You know, it serves them as well as it serves us, because their evolution changes when we become more conscious.
We're all connected.
We're all connected. Can't get away from that.
It's very true. So when is this book coming out? Because you had so many questions there that I was like, yes, I want to know that question. I want to know the answers to those questions. So when is this book coming out? When can we get access to it?
We're saying in the fall of 2019. And when I talked to Chris today, she said, if all goes well.
Books take on a life of their own.
I think we're going to do self-publishing on Amazon as we are at this point. She's got a couple other books out that are more academic. So we're switching this to something that's more mainstream and not necessarily academic.
Fabulous. And you said it's kind of gained, it's geared towards being a workbook of sorts.
Yeah. So for people to have space to write about what their belief systems are, where do you think they came from, that type thing. So it's more of an investigation in some of that workbook so that people can take it as a meditation type thing. It's, let's go inside and think of where that comes from. For some people, that may be easy, and for others, they may need some assistance with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that when that comes out. So keep us posted.
I will.
So how can people find you, you know, kind of moving forward from here?
Well, because I don't live in the area, I primarily work on the phone. So my access is equally as effective on the phone as it is in person.
Absolutely.
And so they can go to either one of those websites. My phone number is at the bottom. They can connect to me through, because it's the cell number, so they can text me or they can email me on either one of those.
So if you're just tuning in, this is for connecting with Darlene Vandegrift, who is a transformational counselor, an author, multidimensional mediator, an artist, a medical intuitive. And her website is soulunion.com and also spirituallyevolvedlightforce.com.
And there is a workshop, by the way.
And there is a workshop. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So February 2nd at the Tibetan Center in Kingston, New York.
Okay.
There's a workshop, I believe it's 9:30 to 3:30, and that'll be put on the website too, so they can see that.
And what is that workshop all about?
It's called Home, which is called Heart of the Manor Evolution. So it's about these beings in relation to what they want us to know about, and who we as humans are, the heart of the manor within the universe. And so how to access our heart space, what do we need to do with that, how to stay, you know, there's a lot that happens in those workshops that are given to me at the time of the workshop. So I get a loose idea of what it's about. And then once they start to work and once they see who signs up, it starts to get woven into who's there.
Very cool. Very cool. So if anyone is listening and they have some stuff going on with your physical body that you need healing and any kind of chronic conditions that you just are like, I don't understand what's going on. If you have issues with relationships, all kinds of things that just need a little unsticking, and you are into finding out a little bit more of the cosmic world of all of this, or the past lives, or just mm-hmm. the real, real reason of what's going on. This is an excellent resource and an excellent guide to help you kind of get to that place.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. I think you're doing great work. So did you have anything else that you wanted to throw out there? A couple webinars coming up or anything in January?
I need help with webinars.
Okay. All right. So maybe not webinars.
I'm not sure how to do this. I would love to do them. But yes, thanks for bringing it up.
Okay. It was also on your website, so I thought I would just throw that out there. But maybe that's not the one. So there's the workshops in February in Kingston, New York. And then there's any kind of work that you do over the phone.
Mostly over the phone. I mean, people can come and see me if they want. I'm upstate New York, outside of Windham, New York.
Okay.
And I do hands-on work, and I still see people, but primarily I work on the phone.
Fabulous. And I hope that you have a fabulous evening, everyone. And thank you so much, Darlene Vandegrift, for coming in and visiting us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Take care, everyone.